Thanks for listening to iTruths, the teaching ministry of Fellowship Bible Church of Texarkana, Texas. I'm Richard Hornock, the senior pastor of Fellowship Bible Church, and the following is a message that I delivered during one of our Sunday morning worship services. I trust it will be beneficial to your walk with Jesus Christ. Thanks again.
Today is Halloween. It is October 31st. Two, 3 months ago when I was looking at the calendar and kind of laying out what we were going to do this fall in terms of Sunday morning sermons and stuff, I saw that and I thought, I want to preach on Halloween. One of the things, I set a goal back like 12 years ago when I turned 60. That's a joke, by the way. When I turned 60, I thought, you know what? I'm not going to get to do this forever, so I want to do as much new material as I possibly can. And so about 2 months ago, I said, I am going to do a sermon on Halloween. And about 3 weeks ago, I told Vicki, I'm going to do a sermon on Halloween. And she said, you are crazy. What in the world are you going to say about Halloween? Well, here's the deal. You can't get away from Halloween, can you? Halloween is everywhere. And so what I want to do today is just kind of give us a little Halloween 101, because you know what? You and I, as believers, we need to know how to think, how to respond. What does God say about this thing? I mean, my goodness, this morning I had to search for something, and even Google is reminding me that today is Halloween. And I want you just to look at that image that's up there. And don't look at it through the cool graphics, but think about it from a biblical filter. What are you supposed to think? What am I supposed to think? As people who are really and truly trying to do what the front of the bulletin says, and that is to be fully devoted followers of Jesus Christ. How are you, how am I, supposed to respond to a holiday like Halloween, who are trying to be fully devoted followers of Jesus Christ? Well, that's the objective today. Do you know what? This weekend, we will spend as much money as we spend on any other holiday other than Christmas. Some are estimating $9 billion are spent just on decorations for Halloween. Now, we didn't spend any, and I don't know whether you spent any, but that averages out to $100 a household. Can you think about that? That means that if, since the Hornocks spent zero, somebody else spent $200 on it. That's huge. That is huge. Now, how have believers responded to Halloween? Well, I'll tell you how they responded. I remember as a kid, we relished it. I was a missionary kid. I was a pastor's kid. I mean, we went all out. The gruesomer, the better. It was almost like they were just oblivious to it. I remember my most memorable Halloween night was we did a haunted house in the basement of the church. And you know, the thing that I think is really interesting, now, many of the people who organized it now are dead, but the ones that are still alive, I'm sure that if I told them and reminded them of what they did in the basement of Murray Bible Church, because that's what it was called back then, they'd cringe. And it's really like, how in the world did we do that? But back in the 60s and the 70s, Halloween was full blown. I mean, I was watching a little YouTube video of John Piper talking about Halloween. You know, John Piper, St. John, everybody loves John Piper. He's like, we are serious Halloween people. You know, we were going after it hard. All of us relished it. But then it's kind of interesting, about 40 years ago, we kind of woke up and we said, hey, what in the world is this stuff all about? And what in the world is it really there? And the ghosts and the goblins and the graveyards and the spirits coming out of the tombs and all that stuff. And so then we all ran away from it. It's kind of interesting. We were talking about this sermon over breakfast a couple days ago, and I think it was on Tuesday morning, and Eleanor said, well, you know, I've actually never trick-or-treated. I mean, the girl's going to be 18 years old in January. She's never trick-or-treated in her life. Vicki and I, this is how we responded. I mean, we didn't do anything with Halloween. I remember the first time Halloween happened to be on a Wednesday night, and some left-wing radical said, we ought to do Fall Fest on that night. And it's like, that really challenged my categories. And I'm not talking 30 years ago. I'm talking 10 years ago when we first started doing Fall Fest. Because I was of the mentality, and Vicki was of the mentality, that we ought not to have anything to do with it. And quite frankly, that's not a bad option. Sometimes what we've worked really hard to do is just replace it. Fall Fest. It's kind of a replacement to Halloween. But then there's another thing. Another way that Christians have responded is, okay, well, let's just reduce it down. Because, I mean, what is it after all? It's just costumes and going to the neighbor and getting candy, you know, and they didn't know these 10 facts, and since they don't live on YouTube, they didn't learn those 10 facts. Now, let me just put everyone at ease, okay? I'm not going to ruin anybody's Halloween. I'll give you the punchline if you promise not to leave. The only response I think that is wrong up there is to relish it. And I think after you hear a little bit more, you'll say, okay, there are parts of it that we just should not be part of. And it could be that for some of you, you really should run from it. Maybe any kind, there's things that are about it, and it's just not something you really should be part of. Maybe it is something that you shouldn't have anything to do with. But for, I think, probably many of us, if not most of us, we can replace it. We can find a way to reorient it. And if we'll reduce it down, we can, to the glory of God, you know, contribute to the economy and help that $9 billion to get spent, okay? So that's a little bit of the punchline there. Okay, quick history. Where in the world did this thing come from? Let me tell you, this thing dates back the way before Christ. It's over 2,000 years. Celtics, Druids, they had a fall fest that marked the change of the season between harvest, life, and winter, death. And right around this time, you know, October 31st, November 1st, depending on how your calendar was, that's when they thought the seasons changed. And the Druids worshipped a god, the god of death, called Samhain. And they thought this is the time when Samhain went and gathered up all the souls of all the people that have died in the last year. And so he'd go around and gather them all up. And remember on the little video you saw the whole thing about Jack? Irish tradition says that Jack met with the devil and they decided, you know, being a good Irishman, he said, hey, before we make anything, you know, any kind of deal, let's go have some drinks. And so Jack and the devil went to a bar or a tavern or whatever you have there in Ireland. And Jack cheated him out of the bill. Made the devil pay for his own beer. And so the devil was so angry about him, he was decided he's not going to gather Jack to his eternal rest, but instead leave his soul to wander the earth. And so Jack, because he only could come out at night, had to get a turnip, but later it changed into a pumpkin, and he'd light that, make that as a lantern and walk around it. And so that's why they call it jack-o'-lanterns. But where did it come from? It came from this legend of someone who cheated the devil because he didn't want his soul to leave the earth. And so his soul is just wandering around. Well, this has been celebrated, honored, observed for over 2,000 years. In about 600 A.D., now some of you are getting on Wikipedia and checking me out. Just do that later, okay? I see some of you with your phones and it's like, where is he getting this? I'll tell you where I got it from afterwards, okay? But, you know, about 600 A.D., Pope Gregory, who was really a pretty good pope, Pope Gregory sat and he saw Christians celebrating the Feast of Salmon and observing these things that are just pagan. And so what he did was he said, you know what, we need to somehow see if we can't Christianize it. So he took the day All Saints Day, a day when they celebrated those heroes of the faith, those spectacular believers like Richard and Vicky. You know, he took that day, which was, I think, May 13th, and said, no, we're going to change it and make All Saints Day November 1st. And that'll be the day that many Christians will come and celebrate the saints, the holy ones. And that's kind of where it picked up the name All Hallows Eve, Halloween, All Holy Ones Eve, the day before the day we celebrate the saints. All Saints Day is tomorrow, November 1st. It's the day, by the way, that Martin Luther, 504 years ago, wrote up a document with 95 grievances that he had against the organized church of places where their theology had diverted from true biblical practice. And he went and posted them on the door of his church there in Wittenberg, Germany. And why did he do it on October 31st? Why did he do it on Halloween? Because he knew that the next day, on November 1st, the church would be packed and everyone would see the bulletin. It's like someone coming out here, you know, before some big service that we're going to have and putting up their campaign poster or, hey, here's five things that are wrong with fellowship, you know, and all of you and all of the visitors that we had that day would come and see it. That's why Martin Luther chose that day, most likely. Well, you know what's interesting? We in this country never observed Halloween. The Puritans didn't bring it with them. They saw it as this thing that had these pagan roots. And, you know, because of their separation from the church, the Catholic Church, I mean, they didn't even celebrate All Saints Day that much. It wasn't really, you've got to blame it on the Irish. It wasn't until the potato famine of 1848, when Irish immigrants came to this country, and that's when this country, for the first time, kind of started observing something like Halloween, similar to what it is. And as time went on, all of those customs, the trick-or-treating, the jack-o'-lantern, the spooky stuff, the scary stuff, the costume stuff, all of that entered in. Of course, World War I knocked it out of it, and the Depression really did a number on it, because who's got money to buy candy to give to the kid down the street? So nobody did it. And just as it was starting to revive, World War II came and really knocked the socks out of it. But then people started recognizing, you know, hey, our God is not being served here. Who is our God? Our God is Mammon. And so in the 50s, there was this concerted effort to generate it, and they've been pretty successful, because what's going to happen this weekend? $9 billion is going to get spent on this holiday we call Halloween. And I think all of us would probably recognize, that as our culture has gotten further and further and further away from its biblical roots, gotten more secular, the general cultural observance of Halloween has gotten further and further and further away from biblical standards, norms. I mean, just think about it. I mean, you know, okay, I'm 63. Think about if you're, you know, say 30 or 40 or 50. Think about Halloween was celebrated when you were a kid. And think about how it is celebrated today. I mean, we're so much more into the witches and the ghosts and the blood and the guts and the gore, the violence. I mean, our culture is relishing these things that, you know, I still remember, you know, we loved Cosby before we found out who Cosby was. One of their Halloween episodes, Bill had gone off to the store to buy a whole bunch of scary stuff for Halloween, spiders, cobwebs, and all that stuff. And he brings it home. He also had to stop by the hardware store to buy a hammer and a drill. And I don't know if you remember that episode, but he brings it home and Rudy and Theo and the other kids are looking through to see all the scary stuff that Dad bought for Halloween. You know, and he pulls out a spider and they yawn at it. He pulls out a cobweb and they yawn at it. He pulls out something else and they, you know, take a pass on it. And then they said, "Did you buy anything else?" And the only thing else he bought was a drill and a hammer. And they're like, "Yes, this is Halloween." You know? And we can laugh at it, and I laughed at it, and I still think it's pretty creative, but at the same time, when you sit and think about it, I mean, really? The stuff that's out there? I mean, how do I, as a person who's trying to be a fully devoted follower of Jesus Christ, how am I supposed to respond? Is that just a mini ha-ha that I laugh at and say, "Oh, it's no big deal," because to me, it's just going over to the Bruce's and getting a sack of candy. Maybe, maybe not. So here's our challenge. Now, if you're taking notes, you ought to write these passages down, because I'm going to turn to them, but I don't really want to have us take the time for you all to, unless you just can keep up. But look at Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 10. This is Moses giving instructions to the people of God about what life was supposed to be like when they got to the land of promise. He said in verse 9, he says, "When you enter the land which the Lord your God gives you, you shall not learn to imitate the detestable things of those nations." Verse 10, "There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or daughter pass through the fire." In other words, be, you know, child sacrifice. "One who uses divination. One who practices witchcraft. One who interprets omens, or sorcerers, or one who casts spells, or mediums, or spiritists, or one who calls up the dead." You know, you'd almost get the impression that Moses was instructing the Israelites about how they were supposed to function once they got into the United States of America in 2021. Is that not true? I mean, today is all about, you know, making it cool for the witchcraft and the omens and the sorcerers and all that stuff. I mean, we're to abandon that. We're to flee that. We're to see it for what it is. Galatians 5:20. I mean, one of the fruits of the flesh, as opposed to the fruit of the Spirit, you know, we all remember the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, long-suffering, etc. But a couple verses before that, he said, "Hey, here's the fruit of the flesh." See, Galatians 5:20, and one of the things that it lists is sorcery, along with immorality and fornication and other things. But it's put on that level. This is serious stuff. 1 Samuel 15:23, great passage. That's the passage where God finally got to the end with Saul and decided for certain Saul was not going to be the king anymore and he was going to go find a replacement, namely David. And Saul is having this argument with Samuel, the prophet, about his partial obedience. "Hey, I partially obeyed what God said." And Samuel said, "Partial obedience is total disobedience." And in verse 23, there's this line that talks about the sin of rebellion, the sin of disobedience, is the same thing as divination. Interesting turn of a phrase there. This is serious. This is not that, you know, that witchcraft, those Ouija boards, that spooky stuff. I mean, it's serious stuff when you think about it from a biblical standpoint. You know, we know the truth. So you've got all of that going on there. about God calling us out. But there's a passage I would like you to turn to. Look at Romans chapter 14. This is actually the passage that we're going to look at next week. Romans chapter 14. And let me just start here at the beginning, okay? So here's the early Christians, believers. And they were plucked right out of very pagan, sinful, secular, humanistic societies. And they had to figure out how to be in the world, but not of the world. And so in 1 Corinthians 9, Paul has a whole discussion about it. And in Romans 14, he's got a whole discussion about it. And actually, this is what the next two sermons are about. Remember, we're normally looking at the second half of Romans this fall. Here's where we're going to look at next week, but let me just kind of whet your appetite. What the Apostle Paul says in Romans 14, he says, "Now accept one another, except the one who is weak in the faith, but not for the purpose of just passing judgment on his opinions. One has faith that he might eat all things. But he who is weak may just eat vegetables." What in the world is he talking about? He's talking about how most of the meat that was for sale back in that day had been meat that had already been sacrificed to some pagan idol. And what Paul does in this discussion, he goes on and he says, it doesn't bother me a bit. Shoot, that stuff's on sale. You know, they sacrificed it to Zeus and I can get my hamburger at 50 cents a pound. I'm going to do it. You know? And someone else would say, yeah, but it was sacrificed to Zeus. And Paul said, hey, if it really bothers you, spiritually speaking, go ahead and do it. Yeah, it'll cost you $2 a pound, but you shouldn't compromise your conviction. Well, look down at verse 5. This is where I really wanted to bring it out. He said, one man regards one day above another. Another regards every day just alike. I mean, there's some people that, you know, Easter is a high and holy day for them, and it's super important. And most of us would say, hey, we ought to be celebrating Jesus' resurrection every day. Okay, that's the day the calendar has, but, you know, it is just a day on the calendar, and I ought to be passionate about Easter every day, not just April 4th. Or the same thing goes on with Christmas. Why do we get so excited about God's birthday, Jesus' birthday? I mean, we don't even know if it really was. That's just a day on the calendar. We ought to celebrate Jesus' advent every day. And so some see it as a high day, some see it just an every day. Well, he's not talking about it, but I think also might have been happening to early Christians is they had holidays like a Halloween. I mean, good grief. Remember, the emperor thought he was God and promoted himself as God. Caesar is divine. Well, maybe they had an All Caesar's Day. And everyone's going to celebrate and everyone gets the day off work. And, you know, there's sales leading up to it. And you can buy some clothes or food or things for the backyard at a discount because it's All Caesar's Day, the day we're celebrating our God, Caesar. Well, so the Christian that wants to be a good steward of his money, is he supposed to go to Home Depot and that's the day he's going to buy his backyard furniture? Because you can get it 50% off. It's All Caesar's Day. You know, are we going to have a backyard cookout that afternoon? Are we going to actually take the day off? You know, and kind of enjoy it. I'll be honest, I grew up in Salt Lake. You know what the biggest holiday of Salt Lake in Utah is? July 24th. July 24th. It's actually Mariah's birthday, but they're not celebrating that. They would if they knew about it, but it's not that. July 24th, 1847 was the day that Brigham Young and the early Mormon pioneers came to Salt Lake and said, this is the place God has provided for my people, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And that's the biggest holiday there is. I mean, for the longest time, it's a state holiday, but for the longest time, they didn't even deliver the mail until someone told the federal government, did you know that federal employees are taking July 24th off in Utah? And then they finally had to start working. But when I was a kid, you didn't get mail, the banks were closed, government offices were closed, whether they were state or federal. It's the biggest holiday. Now, how do I, as a believer who know the truth about their theology, how do I respond? Do I want to go to work anyway, even though everyone's getting the day off? Do I want to go to Albertsons and shop because there's tons of great sales? It's just like 4th of July. That's a little bit like Halloween. And we're going to look at these next couple chapters here to see. But here's what I want you to see is we're in this situation. This is our challenge, okay? We're supposed to run away from it, or at least be insulated from it and careful about it. But at the same time, it is all around. You can't even pull up Google without seeing the stuff that's there. And tonight, if you choose not to go to the Murphys and help us there, and you stay at your house and you forget to turn the porch light off, you're going to get someone coming to your house and they're going to want some candy. Are you going to be I don't know what you are when you don't give candy, but are you going to be a Scrooge and not give the kids candy? What are you going to do? How are you going to respond? You got kids and they want to go be part of it. I mean, it's just going door to door and kind of connecting with the neighbors. I didn't know anything about all that stuff. And, you know, I'm going to forget about it anyway because that video, I won't be able to find it on YouTube to know that stuff. What am I going to do? How am I going to respond? Well, let me complicate the question a little bit more for us. And then I'll try to wrap it up here in 6 minutes and 14 seconds. Okay, let me just put a highlight. You know this. I know I'm preaching to the choir. But I want to put a highlight on 4 flashpoints. 4 places where I really see what our culture is doing that really intersect in a violent way, to be honest, with biblical truth. I mean, just think about if you were to develop a theology based on how our culture celebrates Halloween, man, they've totally got death wrong. Death is distorted. I mean, what is the verse we love to quote at a funeral? To be absent from the body for the believer is to be face to face with Jesus Christ. 2 Corinthians 5:10, 5:9 actually. What's the one we want to remind unbelievers of? I think it's in Galatians. It's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. There are no spirits of other dead people wandering around. Jack didn't need a lantern to walk around because Jack, once he died, was in eternity facing his Creator. I mean, this whole thing of ghosts and goblins and things like that, it isn't there. In reality, what is it? We know. You guys have been in church enough to know. What is it? If there are spirits out there that are evil, what are they? They're demonic. It's demon. It is the deepest form of spiritual warfare. And I think we dare not just blow it off like, oh, it's no big deal. I mean, that's there. So here's our culture. I mean, we're, you know, it's this big holiday, but, you know, if someone was to say, well, I'd love to know about death. What's really there after someone dies of this or that? You know, according to the culture, man, well, their spirit might float away and, you know, might hang out for 10 or 15 years haunting the place that they died in. No, that's not biblical. Think about what it did to the violence. And I've already talked a little bit about it, but the whole violence thing is just kind of being normalized. You know, someone with an eye hanging out or a throat slit or, you know, axe in their head or whatever. I mean, and it's almost like, you know, that's okay. That's you know, to be expected. And, you know, we kind of get a little scared of it, but then we get used to it and all that stuff. I mean, honestly, think about the violence that is sometimes represented. You know, the little bit of reading I did on Dracula, supposedly was a real person, lived in the 1300s in a country called Transylvania, in a castle. You know what he was? You know what we'd call him today? We'd call him a mass murderer. They think that he probably was responsible for the death of 100,000 people to protect his land, to protect his property, to protect his things. And he'd do it in some of the most gruesome ways that are out there. But what do? We kind of celebrate him. It's like 500 years from now, someone, you know, celebrating Hitler, you know, because he helped put 6 million Jews to death, plus many, many more. Another one, just the whole evil that is celebrated. And then here's the last one, just the fear. You know, think about it. Think about fear from a... This is a sermon for another day, and it probably will be a sermon on another day. But just think about fear. Okay, from a biblical perspective, it's like fear is a two-sided coin. There's the good fear. We're supposed to fear the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. What is it? What is it saying? It's talking about that respect, that admiration, that honor that we give to this authority. So there's a good fear when it's the fear of the Lord, the good side of fear. But what were the angels always saying? What did Jesus say numerous times? Fear not. Why? Because they were fearing something other than God. They were fearing a storm. They were fearing this angel that had just appeared to them. So when Gabriel sees Zacharias or Gabriel sees Mary, what does he say to them? Fear not. Why? Because it's like initially the panic was, here's this being that just pops into my view. And they were afraid of him. And if you sit and tease that out, that bad fear that we have is because there's the absence of the good fear of recognizing there is a God that is in complete and total control. And what's happening is what the way fear is supposed to work in us in a biblical way is if we're fearing God, we don't need to fear anything else. Write that down. Take that to the bank. If you fear God, you don't need to be afraid of anything else. It doesn't mean you live a cavalier life, an unchecked life, an unevaluated life. It doesn't mean you take inappropriate risks. But if you fear God, you don't have to fear anything else. But if you don't fear God, you better be afraid of everything else. I mean, it's just that way. That's the biblical view of fear. Now, what is Halloween doing with this good emotion or feeling that God has put there for us to remind us of our trust and confidence being in God? It's just kind of desensitizing us. It's taking fear and cutting the guts out of it, because it's okay to get afraid of that and that because it's no big deal and, you know, it's just a spook or it's just a decoration or I just got surprised and that's why I'm feeling the fear. You know, and so I could go on and on, but, you know, think about it. All the things that are going on here just should raise our sensitivity to this thing. You know, one of the biggest problems with Halloween, to be honest, is that it actually has zero spiritual orientation. It's like, what can we as believers grab onto? You know, if you know your history well enough, you know that we call it Easter, but we really should call it Resurrection Sunday, because Easter comes from Ishtar, who was one of the gods that they early pagans celebrated. And the Christians grabbed it and kind of reoriented it and all of that stuff. And so Easter now, at least for us and many people, It's all about the resurrection, although there's still some elements like an Easter bunny or this or that in there. Same thing with Christmas. We kind of grabbed another pagan holiday and we've said this is the day we're celebrating Jesus' resurrection. But we still talk about an elf in a red suit and we still talk about, we put up Christmas trees and things like that. And I'm all for it. We get a big tree, you know. But what's happened through the centuries? We've reoriented it. It hadn't happened yet with Easter. So let me just wrap it up, and I probably raised more questions than I have even come close to answering. But just because I really want you to be a fully devoted follower of Jesus Christ who will think biblically. So with all of that out there, okay, I definitely think we can cross off the relish. This is not a day on the calendar. I can get all in to Labor Day. I can get all in to Memorial Day. These secular holidays that have nothing to do with spiritual things. I can still get into Columbus Day, by the way, too. But, that's another day. But Halloween, I mean, like we innocently and naively did when I was a kid 50 years ago, we can't do that. Let me just tell you. I mean, the whole witchcraft thing, the ghosts, the goblins, all that stuff, the believer should have no part of that. I don't care what your kid wants to dress up like, but he wants to dress up like that, or she wants to dress up like that. That's where you as a parent or a grandparent have to step in and say, no, honey, let me talk to you about what the people of God are supposed to be like. This is something in our culture, but we don't have anything to do with that. We're not going to make light of these skeletons that walk around and these spooks. I mean, what's the scariest thing on Halloween? It'd be to go out here to Chapelwood and walk through the cemetery because all these spirits are out there. Well, what kind of larky is that? That's not biblical. That's not truth. As God's people, we should be thinking more clearly, more biblically. Do we need to run? Some probably do. Some should. I mean, Vicki and I did for a long time, still kind of do, but not all the way, not like we did years ago. But some should, to be honest. I mean, in the same way that in the next couple of weeks, we're going to see that some people shouldn't have eaten that meat sacrifice to idols or shouldn't have observed that special day. Some people probably should not. Maybe because of their past, of things they experienced as a kid, or maybe because of the culture where they're put in. They can't go to a party without everyone being there acting like a witch or a warlock. And you just have no choice. We're kind of, lucky to be in a place that's still relatively conservative. But some people probably do need to run from it. And if you're one of those people, I want to encourage you to have the courage to do that. Some of you, I mean, sometimes our kids go off to parties, and we know what sometimes those parties can be like. You can't let your kids go there. Now, don't just say no. Explain to them why. Help them to be a person of God who makes wise decisions. But sometimes that party is such that it is so relishing and there's nothing redeeming in it. I don't care who you are. As a believer, you shouldn't be there. So you might need to run. I really think that we can do a part, because for most people, if they hadn't listened to a sermon like this, for most people, it's just putting on a costume and going and getting some free candy from the neighbors down the street. And it's a good way to go meet your neighbors. I mean, for the longest time, we didn't do it. And then, our neighbors would be, I was expecting you with all those kids to come by. I mean, I got a bag for all of them. And sometimes the next day they'd bring those bags of candy over. It's like delivery service before Amazon, And so then Vicki and I thought, no, this is kind of a, neighbor's night out, and so we'd go, we'd say hi and all that stuff. We downplayed it, but we did go connect with them. But, you know, I remember, like I said, about 10 years ago when someone said, oh, we ought to do Fall Fest on Wednesday night. It's Halloween. Let's not do Awana as it normally is. Let's do a Fall Fest. I mean, that really, you know, challenged me. But now I think it's great. I hope it's not because I've compromised. I hope it's just because I've matured a little bit and grown a little bit in my understanding. I'll tell you one of the things that I think is a missed opportunity. The whole reorient it. Like has done for Easter and Christmas. You know, tomorrow, All Saints Day, the day that the town of Wittenberg woke up and there's these 95 statements that were wrong with the church, and it kick-started what we call the Reformation, that is easily the most significant event outside of the events we learn about in the Bible. See, after 15 years, the church had totally lost its way. The gospel had been dismissed and corrupted. And when Luther, as a young man, saw those errors after studying the scriptures, particularly studying Romans and Galatians and Hebrews, and he wrote those things up, and God used that to launch the Reformation, our life, everybody's life, unbelievers and believers, everybody's life is different because the gospel made a huge difference. I mean, we've missed an opportunity. All Saints Day, November 1st, not because we're here celebrating the heroes of the faith like Richard and Vicky, but we're here celebrating what God did through someone like a Martin Luther in pointing out the errors of the church. That should be huge. And if you don't know what November 1st and Martin Luther and all that stuff is about, you need to go do some reading. Your spiritual heritage is rooted in that. Now I'm way over time, but you get the drift. Go be a fully devoted follower of Jesus Christ. Handle this opportunity, and it is an opportunity, and handle it in a godly way. Let's pray. Lord, I want to thank you for just the chance to talk about all of this stuff today. And Father, we're very grateful that your word is a lamp to our feet and a light to our path. And Father, how each of us responds might be a bit different than the person next to us. I pray, Father, that we would really and truly follow your lead in this for us personally. Father, if we need to run, Father, help us to have the courage to run. If we want to work to reorient and replace or reduce how it's done, Father, give us that wisdom that we would not compromise one bit, but that the gospel and Christ and you would be so fully seen. And we pray, Father, to that end. For it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.